listening to A Lump in the Road. This is the diary of my sister, cancer, and me.
It's the 18th of December, it's a Sunday, and it's about a week since we did our last recording. Looking out the window, sat in one of the bedrooms in my house, thinking how horrific the weather is. Full of snow, there's snow in the air, but it's not coming down. It's dreary, it's dark, there's black ice out. It's just horrid, isn't it?
Yeah.
Why don't you bring us up to speed on what's happened over the last week then? Because we thought we were going to have quite an uneventful week, didn't we? What shall we podcast about next week? Because we've kind of, yeah, where are we going to go with this?
Yeah, we did have a few ideas, but none of them were this particular idea that we're going to talk about. So last Tuesday...
Yes, it was.
Last Tuesday. I don't even know if my brain can compute what the date was. But it was last Tuesday, so 5 or 6 days ago, I got a call from the consultant's office to say that they had had a cancellation for some operation space, some time, for a week on Monday. So Monday the 19th of December. And did I want to bring my surgery forward and have my breast lump removal and reconstruction, the cat flap, funnier a week or so ago.
Yeah.
Doesn't feel so funny now.
Kind of didn't feel real, did it, back then, even though we thought in the moment it was?
Yeah. I mean, I said yes immediately, but then felt sick straight away because it just got very real from that moment on. And it's just been a pretty horrible few days. I can't emphasise enough, from a practical point of view, I'm obviously really pleased that the surgery is happening. And I am going to go into the hospital tomorrow morning with cancer and walk out tomorrow evening or late afternoon without cancer.
That's a mind-boggling sentence.
It's crazy.
Right there, isn't it?
Yeah. So on paper... it's really, really, really good news, but I feel really emotional and I've been crying a lot this week.
Oh, don't cry now.
Because it is really, it's real all of a sudden, it's really real.
I know.
And I'm going from feeling like a very well person to feeling like a person who really has got a life-threatening disease, although hopefully it won't be in me by the time I feel like I've got a life-threatening disease. It will be gone.
That's the bizarre thing, isn't it? Because you'll feel probably at your worst tomorrow, and actually in that moment,
I might
fingers
be.
Crossed and touching wood, even though we're not superstitious, but
I am.
You will actually be the wellest
in theory
that you've been.
Everything being equal, if it turns out to be grade one, stage one, if it's not in my lymph nodes, we still don't know whether it's HER2 positive or negative. If it's negative, if we look at the best case scenario, when I feel physically at my worst tomorrow after the operation, I will be physically at my best. But I think there's lots of things that have upset me this week, and it's all to do with how I feel about it, I think. And it does just feel very real. I'm going to feel like a poorly person, and I don't look at myself as a poorly person. I'm not ill. I've been going to the gym. I did 4.5 unassisted pull-ups yesterday morning.
Pretty impressive.
Like, totally blasted them out. And I lift weights. I can do stuff. I walk the dogs. I can do my own ironing. I can go to the loo. I can shower. I can bathe. I can do everything. But as of tomorrow, for at least the next 2 weeks, I can't do a single thing. And then after that, for another at least 2 weeks, only very limited physio that the hospital will give me. And then it'll be a decent length recovery period. And that isn't including the radiotherapy that's about to happen and the potential of chemotherapy. So I feel sad letting go of what I see as my well self and my independent self. And I feel really upset that everyone else is carrying on making plans and doing what they would ordinarily be doing. And I shouldn't be jealous, but I am a little bit, that everyone else gets to carry on and I feel like I'm stuck in limbo not really able to move forward with anything until this is sorted. And is that self-indulgent? Maybe, I don't know.
I don't think you would call it self-indulgent. I mean, the time of year may very well be making this feel even more frustrating. And also the fact that actually your mind was very prepared for a January, let's go, go, go.
It was.
And actually what's happened is that, those emotions that you had locked down in your trapdoor have actually had to come out right now and in a really quick space of period of time. So it's almost like shock rather than, you know, being able to plan and prepare for what you're now feeling.
I did actually think, right, so I will schedule in some time to process what's coming in the first couple of weeks of January.
Of course you've scheduled that into your calendar.
But I just feel like a beaten down version of myself. I feel really probably not my lowest ebb, because I think the terror after finding out it was cancer was probably the lowest ebb, but I certainly have been more tearful than I've ever been before. And I think as well that I wouldn't have said no to the cancellation ever, but it has really hit me very quickly that all of a sudden I have got cancer. It's
shit just got real, basically.
And I didn't really feel that it was real.
It's like all huge things in life though, Larissa, I think, because you don't really believe something until it actually happens, if that makes sense. And I think the surgery makes it real, but you were planning on feeling like that in January.
I was planning on processing it's hijacked me.
It's the same with anything that's massive. You don't, like when you give birth, you don't ever, although you know that baby's coming out, you always go, it's not really real until it happens, and then it's real.
Then it's
so totally get it. I'm also wondering, and I know we spoke briefly about this, whether your HRT or lack of HRT and all of those things that you were kind of relying on to stabilise your emotions prior to finding out that you've got cancer, whether that has now also peaked and you're starting to feel those effects.
I think peak is probably a far, a long way off what the peak is going to be, actually, because having spoken to two of my friends who have been through breast cancer recently, and one in particular who said that once she had had her surgery and her chemotherapy and everything, she then had the targeted hormone therapy, which was tamoxifen, that apparently plunged her very quickly and deeply into the menopause. And she said it was really horrific, a deeply unpleasant experience, literally like falling off the edge of a cliff. Now,
had she been in, was she perimenopausal before?
No, no, she wasn't. And this is the thing. So I was perimenopausal before my breast cancer diagnosis and had been taking HRT since January this year. So a combination of estrogen and progesterone, and actually latterly testosterone. And they were keeping me level. In fact, the testosterone in particular had turned me back, almost back into the person I was before I fell off the perimenopausal cliff.
It is that.
Absolutely. But now I feel like I'm back off the cliff, because obviously with a hormone-related cancer, I've had to come off all of my HRT. And the worst part of it, really, for me, the worst symptoms are the sleep disruption and the memory fog. And it was the testosterone that was helping with both of those. So the estrogen definitely stopped my hot flushes, but I actually could cope fine with those, really, if I had to.
This
is all bearing in mind if you had to. But once they added testosterone into the mix, I was able to sleep soundly. I wasn't getting up to go to the loo, and none of that was happening. It was an amazing wonder drug.
Yeah.
And I haven't got that now. So not only am I lying awake worried about having cancer, I'm awake anyway.
Yes.
Do you understand? Do you know what I mean? It's absolutely, like being doubly awake.
Yeah.
And I can no longer go to bed with night nurse, because that was becoming a problem.
Oh, now that is good stuff though, isn't it?
It is really good stuff. I had to knock it on the head because it's too good. But then I thought, you know what? I don't drink, don't smoke, don't do anything naughty. Why can't I have a long-term relationship with night nurse? Why not? Why can't I?
I'm sure plenty of people have relationships with much worse.
I might have her back next week. But yeah, so I think, I mean, we really do need to talk a bit more about HRT and actually dealing with the menopause as we go through the cancer journey, because I'm sure it can't just be me that feels bereft and without options, which is how I do feel. I just haven't had time to research any of them yet, but I will once I've got my head around this surgery. That.
In this last week.
Yeah, a bit lazy. So I think I need to, I will start looking into that. I did speak to my GP about it very briefly as she removed my Myrina coil, which I was using as the progesterone part of my HRT. And she said, look, let's get your surgery sorted first and then we'll talk about it. Because there are other options. I just don't know what they are yet. Yeah. But I'm sure there's not going to be anything as lovely as testosterone.
No. And I think in terms of your emotional state, I'm not saying that you wouldn't have always been emotional. Yeah. But I think it's tenfold, isn't it?
I think it's, certainly magnified.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah. What about, like we mentioned, obviously, the time of year? I mean, we are coming
it's the
up
most
to Christmas.
Wonderful
is
time.
It right now?
For some people it is, and I know. I don't want to dampen their spirits.
And, well, let's talk about dampening people's spirits, because your husband is incredible and has held your hand, not only held your hand, but lifted you up and carried you and been the most wonderful support. And, you know, he really is marvellous, so I can't state that enough. However, he had a bit of a blip this week, didn't he?
He had a small blip, and he'll probably kill me for telling you this, but he did have a blip. And yeah, you're right, it's too late by then. So his blip went something along these lines. Hey, I've accepted the 19th of December for my surgery. Isn't that great news? Yes, that's fantastic. Let's do this. Let's get it out, blah, blah, blah. Fast forward sort of 48 hours later, and we're chatting about what that means from a practical point of view. And of course, like everybody, we've got loads of plans over Christmas, from New Christmas Eve all the way through till the day after Boxing Day. And Andrew all of a sudden realised, or sort of voiced, that he wasn't actually...
No, he didn't just realise it, Larissa, he voiced it. This is where the issue and the blip has happened.
Well, OK, so I happened to say to him, how are you feeling about not being able to drink over the Christmas period? Because, and obviously I meant, because you're going to have to be looking after me, firstly. And secondly, because if I'm well enough to be able to leave the house, you're going to have to do all the driving. Now, just for context,
excuse me,
I don't drink at all anymore. Liked that a little bit too much as well. So again, issues with night nurse, notwithstanding.
I'm just glad you've stopped the night nurse.
Yeah.
It's all good.
So I don't drink anymore, which means that I am the family chauffeur. And that's fine. I drive everywhere. And,
yeah. And
Andrew,
you're very gracious about it as
I don't
well.
Mind. I don't mind. There's absolutely no issue. But that just means that he can always have a couple of drinks. We've never had those conversations in our family.
No.
So I said to him, how are you feeling about, you know, not being able to drink over the Christmas period? And he said...
Wait, was there a tumbleweed moment at this point? Did he look at you as if to go,
no,
wow?
He'd recognised it. And he went, well, there was a big sigh and his whole demeanour sort of looked deflated. And he gave me these little, just like puppy eyes. And he said something along the lines of, oh, you know, and he was serious about this, deadly serious.
This was not
a joke. This was not a joke. Okay. He said, well, you know, when life throws shit at you, you've just got to deal with it, haven't you? And I was like, right, okay. Okay.
So the shit that's been thrown at him is
that he can't drink
that
over Christmas.
He can't get absolutely rat arse over the Christmas period.
Now, if he had not been such a good boy and been so wonderful for the rest of this, I probably wouldn't have told you that story. But I think he can take it.
Did he pay for that?
Yes.
Is he still
did.
Paying for it?
Well, only slightly, but I don't think he even knows he's still paying for it. But yes. Yeah. It's not that I hold a grudge. Grudges make
Much.
You fat. But yeah.
Grudges make you fat.
Yeah. That's
I like
me,
that.
That's what Beatrice and I always used to say. Don't hold a grudge. Grudges make you fat.
Love it.
So, yeah, by that count, I should be massive.
Yeah. Do you know what? You can be very forgiving, but you can, depending on what it is and who it is and the circumstances, you can hold a grudge.
I can, yes. But that's because...
I think we all can.
Oh, hello.
Hello, dog.
Yeah. I think it's because I'm very sensitive, and if I get wounded or hurt...
Yeah. She holds a grudge as well. Sorry, this is one of my Yorkshire Terriers. I think I might just let her out.
I think she
really
needs to go out. Yes.
Out you go. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Go on. Bye-bye. I'm sure you're not going to hold a grudge.
No, I'm not going to hold a grudge. I feel really sorry for him, to be fair. I do. But, you know, when you're talking about having shit thrown at you and your Christmas plans disrupted, I'm rather thinking more having my breast taken off, yeah, that sort of shit hitting the fan, rather than I can't get absolutely trolleyed on 2 litres of whatever his tipple of choice might be for that day. So I'm sure I'll live with a relatively sober Christmas. Oh, and B, to be fair, Beatrice, who has learnt to drive this year, has been super, and she has offered to take some of the stress and strain and drive us on certain nights and things like that.
Oh, well, that's so nice. That is kind.
Yeah, it is really
when she's
sweet.
Not out partying, of course.
When she's not out partying. So we're probably, that won't ever happen.
So that's
going
to limit you to about one afternoon, a hungover afternoon,
but
potentially.
You know what? It's the thought that counts.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more.
Yeah, so there's that. Bless her little heart.
So you're expecting to be able to go ahead as normal for Christmas? I mean, I know you weren't having a huge one on Christmas Day, but my worry is that you're having this surgery tomorrow, which is the
19th
of December. And obviously it's a Monday.
Yes.
And then we're literally a few days away from Christmas, aren't we?
Yes, we are. But I'm under the impression from the consultant that actually, although it sounds like quite a massive surgery, and it does sound complex, it's complex, I think we said this before, from his point of view. Mm. So my recovery shouldn't be too challenging. It just will be a lack of mobility, I think. So the pain will be manageable, with the right sort of medication, and as long as I've got willing ladies in waiting to
hold
look
on,
after
are you talking,
me.
Your husband is the lady in waiting, or
he's the valet.
I love it. Yeah, so obviously it is good timing in the fact that he has broken up from work anyway.
Yes, he finished on Friday, so he'll be around. So timing wise, it couldn't have been better, really, because that means that he won't be worrying about work or any of the other things that he would ordinarily be worrying about if he'd had to take time off. And I'm sure he would have taken the time off, but actually he now won't need to worry about those sorts of issues.
Well, luckily, obviously, as we are joined at the hip, we live literally 30 seconds away from each other. So you will have
You can
regular...
be a lady in waiting too.
I will absolutely be one of your ladies in waiting.
Yeah.
What's the chief lady in waiting called?
Oh, I've no idea. But do you need
her?
A title?
I quite like
I
a title.
You do.
I like to know what my parameters are and who I'm in charge of.
Oh, yeah. Okay, fair enough. You'd definitely be in charge of Beatrice and Andrew, so you can at least have two members of staff.
Indeed. Yeah. You have been to pick up some bits and bobs from the hospital today. And your little face when you came back here and opened up your packages. So talk to me about surgical bras.
Oh, honestly.
When you opened them, did you get the same feeling when you opened that, when you unbox your Agent Provocateur beautiful? No, you didn't get that feeling, did you?
It was not that feeling.
No.
No, it was not that feeling. Even the non-payment of VAT on that item couldn't cheer me up. It was... Oh, they were just horrible. I've had to have post-operative bras. The surgeon said that I needed to wear them for at least 2 weeks. So I've ordered a couple. And, you know, this is the thing. I don't know what size to buy them in. Do they need to be tight? Or do they need to just be comfortable? I don't know what the purpose is. And I didn't think to ask. Is it to compress? Or is it just to hold
just to
steady?
Support, yeah.
So I bought two different sizes. And whichever one they tell me is the right one, I'll order some more.
Yeah.
But they're hideous. Oh. They're so depressing. And
I mean, they aren't a good look for you because...
But they're
I'm
not going
to
be a good look for anybody.
Even that sort of thing.
No. It made me want to cry at the sight of them. They were just... horrible, and it just brought it home to me how real tomorrow is and the fact that I actually have got cancer. I can't reconcile it when I look at myself and when I do my normal day-to-day life, which I'm doing right now. I don't feel like I'm
the two
ill.
It's not matching up, is it?
No, it isn't matching up at all, but these reminders or these things are just now popping up all over the place to say this is happening, this is really what's happening to you. And it's happening to millions of other women and men all over the place. And, you know, I've said this before, I'm really lucky to have you. I've got an amazing husband. My daughter is fantastic. Mum's been brilliant. You know, literally could name check everybody that has been in touch with me. And there have been hundreds of people who've got in touch. The support's been overwhelming. And I can't help but feel so desperately sad for all of those people on their own. I mean, honestly, Heather, it must be
horrific.
Horrendous.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, if so, you know, for example, tomorrow I'm having my surgery and Andrew and Bea will take me and then they'll come back to pick me up later on in the day. They'll take me back to our house, which is warm. We've got nice food and the dogs will be there and I'll get into my comfy bed and hopefully without too much pain, get through till Tuesday morning and then start recovering. And I know there is a positive side to all of that. But, you know, there's so many people that don't get that. And it's really, really heartbreaking. It must be devastating to be going home on your own with no one to talk to or no one to share how you feel or to say, is this bra the right bra? Or do I need to, I don't know. It's just...
It's sad. It's really sad. All of it's very sad.
And I also think as well, especially at this time of year too, would that make it worse? I think, yes.
I think, yeah, because people generally tend to feel at their loneliest and saddest if they are on their own at this time of year, don't they?
Yeah, definitely. I tell you what else has really happened this week as well is I've really missed Dad.
I know.
And that's made me more tearful because... This morning I literally haven't lifted a finger, so I've had coffee in bed, dogs in bed, the papers, everything has been really nice at home because I've been feeling really fragile. And Andrew ran me a bath and he left me in the bath for a little bit and then came down to see if I was okay, only to find me in a tearful mess, like, yeah, with eyes that were quite snottery sobbing, not that particular sob, but the one about half an hour after that was a snotty sob. Yeah, so and I was lying
there.
You're
not a pretty crier.
Not a pretty crier. I am the ugliest crier in the world, and yeah, definitely the ugliest crier. Anyway, so I'm sitting there in the bath thinking maudlin thoughts about, oh, this is the last time I'll be able to have my shoulders in a bath and all that self-pitying nonsense. Naturally feeling quite sorry for myself. And Andrew came down and obviously asked if I was okay. And, you know, started talking to me about Dad because Dad had lots of physical problems. He was otherwise relatively healthy, but had lots of physical issues, as you know. And, you know, in the last 10 years of his life, he must have had so many operations.
Well, we always joked that the Derby Hospital was his second home.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And he was in and out.
We all used to spend so much time in there with him, didn't
we? Yeah, and I don't, and as you know, not just like going in for a broken thumb. He was in there for intensive care operations that went wrong and didn't work, and then he had to have them done again. I mean, that man went through the mill. And Andrew said to me this morning, look, your dad is one of the bravest men I've ever met. Think about how he would be approaching this surgery. And he is right. And Dad would have been very much just let's get it done, because once it's done, then you're on the road to recovery. And my uncle, your uncle, our uncle, said the same thing. And they're a very similar mentality to one another. And
strong.
Yeah, it really is strong. And it's also it's something that I'm really trying to channel, something I'm really trying to emulate. But it has been a wobbly few days.
But you know what? I think, Larissa, you're entitled to a few wobbles on this journey, because you are a naturally positive person. You do try to look on the bright side. Mm. In fact, you don't try. You just, it naturally comes to you. You are bright and happy and positive the majority of the time. But that doesn't mean then that you're weak because you have moments of sadness or even when you're feeling resentful or annoyed or...
This is
those
the thing.
Feelings are okay to have. I'm pretty sure everyone has them.
I don't, well, maybe they do, but for me, and this is a really sad and awful thing to admit, this week I've felt really angry with the world, really jealous of people just getting on with their lives, of making plans into January, and just a really resentful and just so cross. And I've got nowhere to channel that other than in tears or through Andrew. Oops. Sorry, Andrew. I've got nowhere to put it.
And I don't think that you need always somewhere to put something. You just need to be able to voice it. Tell me, tell whoever.
Yeah.
Be cross, be snappy with people. You know, it's probably the only time in your life you're probably going to be able to get away with it. So, I'm not saying milk it, but I think that you are allowed to feel as you're feeling. What I do think is once the surgery has happened, I think you'll see and feel back to...
Different.
Yeah, I really do. I think it will be quite instant, if that makes sense, because like you say, you're going to go in with cancer and you're going to come out hopefully
without cancer
free, you know, and that's only a positive, isn't it? Now, I know we've been quite, not depressing today, but, you have felt really, really sad.
Yeah.
And you know, that's all very valid. But I was thinking of something that is positive that you'll be experiencing tomorrow. Pre-surgery.
Oh, yes!
I'm talking about your blooming. Oh. God, people are going to wonder what's going on in this household. You've got your night nurse addiction. You don't drink anymore because you liked that rather too much. So why don't you tell people how you feel about your anaesthetics?
Can I really?
Yeah, why not?
Oh, this is awful. So there is a silver lining in this big doomy cloud, and that is general anaesthetics. Now, I know you feel the same as me. But I do love a nice general.
No, but the going under.
The going part, under and going the fighting down, yeah. It. I think it must be like having the most illicit Class A naughty drugs in the world, but just in a really safe environment because, you know, you've got your anaesthetists there that have trained for donkey's years to do this very stressful job.
Yeah.
Looking after you, monitoring you, and you just get to... Oh,
float away.
Float away.
Yeah, it is a good feeling.
Yeah. I did tell you, but I haven't obviously shared this, but the last surgery I had, which was spinal surgery, I actually said to my anaesthetist before I went under, I said, come on, please, put me out of my misery. Tell me, is the feeling that I love so much as the anaesthetic is sort of...
Washing
over me. Is that feeling similar to having like really hardcore drugs? You know, like the drugs you would never, ever, ever take in real life.
Yeah.
And he went, yeah. He said, it feels exactly like that. I was like, oh my God, I knew it.
But that makes me remember my story about the sedation that I had
and
Michael Jackson drugs.
Yes.
When I was going through IVF and I had to have a procedure before we did the IVF and they said they were sedating me and we spoke about the sedation and they said the drugs you're going to have, or they may have told me after, is the same drug as Michael Jackson used to use. Recreationally.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, oh my God, that's crazy. But I remember sitting on my bed waiting to go in to have this little procedure and lying there thinking, oh, it's taking time. And then looking up at the door and them coming in and asking how I was and me saying, yeah, I'm fine. When I'm being taken for my procedure, and they said, you've just come back, you're in recovery. I said, no, you've got the wrong person. I haven't been yet. I'm waiting to go. And they said, no, you've definitely been. You're in recovery. It's the same room as you were in before, but you are in recovery. And I had
no idea
or recollection. Now, that was both freaky and a little bit exciting at the same time.
Also, though, a missed opportunity because you clearly didn't have the lulling yumminess of going into your general.
I absolutely didn't. No, I didn't have any of that feeling. But it was instantaneous.
Yeah.
I felt in that moment I'd been sat
there,
I'd been waiting, and then the person walked into the medical professional walked back in, asked me how I was, and I was absolutely gobsmacked that I'd already been for my procedure. So,
to be fair, that might not have been the anaesthetic. That could have been your general perimenopausal brain.
I wasn't perimenopausal then. I was about to have a baby. See, I knew we'd find a way to giggle and to shake off those blues.
Well, if ever there was a person to do it with, it's you. I think I might rent you out.
That's a bit weird saying that.
Rent a sister. Everyone needs a sister like you at a time like this. Well, that brings us to the end of episode 4. Thanks once again for listening. You know the drill by now. Hit the subscribe button, give us a 5-star review, and if you really liked it, tell your friends. All right, take care. Until next time.